ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Norman, as a male doctor, how much did you get taught in your early years? Think right back, way, way back.
To before time began.
Yes, when the T-Rex was roaming. What were you taught about women's health?
Well, we talk quite a lot about women's health, but the thing that sticks in my mind was in the days when TRX was roaming the earth, there weren't many female gynecologists. And we had a professor of obstetrics and gynecology who was a woman and actually an illustrious researcher. And she gave us one of our first lectures in O&G. And she said, this lecture is actually for the men in the audience. Before you learn how to do a vaginal examination, I want you just to do a mental exercise for me, she said. Imagine you're in a very cold examination room. A nurse has told you to take off your pants and your underpants and makes you lie on a cold bench with just a light sheet on top. And then a female doctor comes in, doesn't introduce herself, doesn't warm up her hands, grabs you by the balls and then walks out again. How would you feel?
Wow.
Certainly got our attention.
Yes.
And I suppose we should have had a warning, about an X-rated warning for this week's health report, but
it's all good from here.
That's right. Just forgot to tell you before we started.
And what an effective way to illustrate a very important point.
That's right. The dehumanisation of the gynaecological examination.
That is something we are covering on the health report today. More specifically, we're delving into women's pain, how it has been dismissed, and what potential changes are happening in this area.
That's coming up on the health report.
I'm Priya Alexander on Wurundjeri Land.
And I'm Norman Swan on Gadigal Land. Also on the show, nature versus nurture. How much of who we are and how healthy we are is determined by genetics or influenced by the environment. A new study reassesses the proportionality.
The microorganisms in your gut, the bugs that make up your gut microbiome, could either boost your response to a vaccination or weaken it. In the news, something we've spoken a lot about, Norman, this year is the shingles vaccine, and that vaccination against shingles appears to protect against dementia. And we've talked about, is that due to preventing infection from shingles itself or the adjuvants in the vaccine? I feel like we've done that a lot in 2025. New research, though, has been published in Cell, which suggests the benefits are far more wide-reaching.
Yeah, this comes from the same group that published the original study, which actually partly comes from Stanford University in California, even though the study was based on Welsh data. To remind people what the data were, there was a point in time in Wales where if you were 70 years old on a certain, you know, your birthday was before or after, I think it was the 1st of September on a certain date, you were eligible after that date to get the shingles vaccine, the old one, not the new one. So it was a natural experiment. People, you know, before and after, there was no difference otherwise between the two groups of people. And people who had the shingles vaccine had a significantly lower rate of dementia. Now they've followed up using GP records in this paper to see what else it might have done. And what they found was that it seems to have reduced the prevalence of mild cognitive impairment, which may or may not lead to dementia, and seems to slow the progress of dementia, and there were fewer dementia deaths in that group.
I think it's fascinating because it tells us that what they've been able to capture using this data set is really people without any cognitive impairment going in, people with some pre-existing mild cognitive impairment, and then dementia. So you get a really beautiful cross-section of all, I guess, brain stages, for want of a better term, and there appears to be benefit across the whole clinical disease course. So, I mean, this could have significant public health implications.
Yeah, and the question is, that was the old vaccine.
The live vaccine, yeah. So Zostavax, people might know it as, and now we use Shingrix, which is the recombinant one in Australia.
And the question is, does it have the same effect? And the data are starting to come in that the new shingles vaccine does have this effect, and it may be a bit more effective than the old one at preventing or delaying dementia. And as we've said before, it may not just be, you know, there are all sorts of theories why shingles vaccine could work, because the chickenpox virus does live in nerve cells and could induce the sort of damage that starts the process off for dementia. But it may be another immune effect, because there are other vaccines that seem to have the same effect. And the other really interesting and important finding in this study was that the benefit of shingles vaccine was even greater in women than in men, which may be a reflection of the fact that dementia is more prevalent in women than in men. So greater benefit to be had. Important.
Yeah, and I think this is an excellent reminder that if you're eligible or you're considering it, go and chat to your GP, because preventing shingles is one thing. It's a painful condition, but also we're learning about these cognitive benefits, prevention, you know, reducing the disease progression if you've already got dementia and you're vaccinated. So wide-reaching benefits.
So the next story is one that I thought was a bit over-enthusiastically covered during the week, which was the World Health Organization issuing, if you just took the headlines, a guideline almost fulsomely endorsing GLP-1 medicines for the treatment of obesity. And it wasn't fulsome, it was very conditional, but it was an important statement nonetheless.
Essentially, the World Health Organization has said GLP-1s are an appropriate long-term treatment for obesity for adults, excluding pregnant women.
But they call it a conditional guideline.
Yes, it's conditional, that's right.
And the conditionality is that people don't know the long-term effects of these drugs yet.
Yes.
And there are potential side effects.
And there's equity issues. So the WHO has actually said, look, these might be an option for long-term treatment of obesity, but at the moment they're not widely available. It is still very expensive. The healthcare system is not quite prepared for what this might look like. There's no long-term data. And so certainly they've said that this is an option. They've really been clear that it can't be a medication-only response to managing a really complex, chronic, multifaceted health problem. And I think that's really important as a GP to see the WHO really acknowledge that obesity for people living with overweight obesity is complex. It's not an individual issue. It's actually societal change that's required to really tackle this. But I guess it does give hope that hopefully these medications might be eventually on the PBS for management of overweight and obesity, because at the moment there are applications happening and the PBAC haven't yet approved it.
No, because of the cost. And just remember, the some of the papers that were submitted to the World Health Organization in the early days of them coming out with their response to obesity, particularly from Boyd Swinburne, who's now at the University of Auckland, but was at Deakin University, showed that, you know, the obesity problem is a global problem produced by the global food industry and the availability of cheap empty calories. It's not that people suddenly became weak, weak-willed. It's the external environment, and these GLP-1 medicines are papering over what we've created by lack of regulation of the food industry.
Yeah, it's a far more complex problem than an individual one. And I think, look, in this guideline, and I did, you know, this is a passion area of mine, they do mention intensive behavioural interventions alongside the medication, and they talk about physical activity and dietary interventions. But I did feel that all the expert advice from exercise physiologists, dietitians about resistance training, increasing protein intake, it felt that was a bit lacking to me. And so hopefully this is the start of something even better as time evolves. Hopefully.
Yes. And but remember, the WHO is a global organisation, and, you know, health systems around the world are not necessarily replete with exercise physiologists either.
That's right. Am I turning into a sceptic like you, Norman?
I hope so.
No, hopefully not.
I'd like to think that I've infected you with that virus.
I do wonder if it's slowly happening. I'm thinking by the end of 2025, I'm a bit more scathing, perhaps. Still on the topic of GLP-1s, the Therapeutic Goods
Administration... Yeah, why stop a good thing? You know, just keep going.
It's clearly the hot topic of 2025. I hope we provide a balanced view, though, on a serious note, of all facets of this huge topic, which is really changing a lot of the medical world at the moment. But the Therapeutic Goods Administration this week has updated product warnings for GLP-1s, and there's two big news items in this area, one for tirzepatide, which people would know as Mounjaro. There's been additional contraception advice. So what they've done is an investigation to see if people who are using this particular GLP-1, Mounjaro, if they're taking oral contraception, is it less effective? And they couldn't rule out an association. And so they've precautionary measure said, this is what we suggest for anyone who's the possibility of pregnancy. They need to consider either non-oral contraception, so something like an intrauterine device or an implant, or they need to consider additional contraception when they start the drug or when they increase the dose, which is quite a significant shift.
Yeah, I think you're talking about 4 weeks after...
after the dose change or starting, yeah.
And we'll put a link to this product warning from the TGA in our show notes. And the other thing that we're warning about is something we've spoken about before on the Health Report, which is the reports that are coming through internationally of people on these drugs having depression or exacerbation of the depression or suicidal ideation or ideation about self-harm. And what the TGA says, basically they're saying, we're not ignoring those reports, they're coming in, we need to be careful about if GPs are prescribing these drugs, they need to be careful about this sort of response. They're not saying it's cause and effect, because they haven't got proof of that yet, but there are reports coming through internationally of this side effect. So just, again, something to be careful about. The question is it caused by the drugs? Is it caused by the weight loss? Is it caused by pre-existing mental health issues? Mm. We just don't know at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's important that this is quite complex, and they acknowledge that there might be really complex interplay of all those things you mentioned, but there is no clear causation yet. It's not that the drug necessarily causes it, but it's something that I think I, as a prescriber, am very aware of, but it's now going to all GLP-1s across the board are going to carry this additional product information warning. And if anyone is needing additional support in this space, there is Lifeline, which is 13 11 14.
On ABC Radio National, you're with the Health Report.